Whenever the subject of police brutality against minorities comes up, invariably the conversation turns to black on black crime. So that's what we're going to talk about today, because talking about it is the only way forward. Let's go. Welcome to another exciting, action-packed episode of the Forward Podcast. Glad you could be here. We're part of the One Institution family of podcasts with some really incredible talent, with some really incredible subject matter, and you want to make sure that you check out oneinstitution.com to find out about all the exciting podcasts that we have. That being said, there was an incident that's been in the news this week because an Army officer, a black Army officer, was pulled over by police because he had a license plate infraction. The officer, or the Army officer, drove his car with the hazard lights on to a well-lit place so that he could interact with the cops in a good place. Now, what happened after that was absolutely horrific. Now, mind you, this happened in December. And every single time, that when a black person is accosted by police, immediately conservatives and right-wingers go to this concept of black-on-black crime and as a form of whataboutism, or a red herring, or a straw man, or some other logical fallacy. And this is absolutely, positively correct. There is a problem with black on black crime. But you got to understand something here, is because yes, there is a problem with black on black crime, but guess what? So is white on white crime a problem. As a matter of fact, this country, the United States of America, was founded on white crime. Hey, Revolutionary War, War of 1812, I could go on and on and on. And, you know, even the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which had to do with prohibition, and that's another subject for another time. I mean, that in and of itself is an entirely separate episode. But I digress. I really need to get into this. I need to dive into this quickly. And it's this. When we talk about black-on-black crime, and don't get me wrong, black-on-black crime is fucked up. We recently had someone that was close to us in our family that was a victim of black-on-black crime, a young man that was a member of our church family, close to me and my kids, my family and my kids, that he was shot and killed. And this was a black-on-black crime thing. And yes, it's fucked up, but you've got to understand, how did we get there? And that is the subject of today's podcast. Because the reality is that black people were never given a fair shake in this country. Never. I mean, from the time that we arrived here as indentured servants, and then later as slaves, then after being enslaved, being part of the sharecropping society and a perpetual underclass, being promised 40 acres and a mule, all of these things that were supposed to be done never fulfilled. Black people also, from Crispus Attucks, the very first person to die in the Revolutionary War against Great Britain was a black man. Bet you didn't know that. So blacks have been dying in wars. We died in the Revolutionary War. We died in the War of 1812. We died in the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, Desert Storm, Afghanistan, Iraq. Black people have been dying for this country since its inception. Never to get a fair shake. Never. And here's the thing, that when you talk about black on black crime, you have to understand, why is this a thing? Why is this happening? Because see, when I grew up in Detroit, and I grew up in the hood, and this was not a thing back then. Why? Because there were economic opportunities. in Detroit, you had the booming automobile industry, and the booming automobile industry brought blacks by the thousands from the South to the North to get these good jobs. And from these good jobs, they were able to build lives, build families, build homes, build wealth. And then suddenly, that economic engine dried up. Now, understand this, that this was bad for white people too. White people suffered from the demise of the automobile industry in America, the demise of the steel industry, the demise of the coal industry. The demise of industry has been bad for all Americans, but understand this, that if America catches cold, black America catches pneumonia. That's the reality. Now, if you have a community that once had a stable means of income, a stable means of revenue, a stable tax base, and understand this, that when people are earning money and building wealth, building community, they tend to care for things. Why? Because there is skin in the game. They are invested in what's going on. But take away the economics, take away home ownership, take away infrastructure, take away a property tax base by which the schools have gone from barely making it to absolute shit. And what you get is a prescription for disaster. Because people aren't being educated, people aren't being cared for, the communities are not being kept clean, etc., etc., etc. Listen, when you take economic opportunity out of a community, basically what you're doing is you're depriving that community of hope. And I'm going to tell you something. Hope is the greatest thing in any human being's spiritual arsenal. Because you can have all the faith in the world, but understand this, that hope is the accelerator pedal to the engine of faith. If you don't have hope, that engine of faith is just a boat anchor in your life. It isn't worth a goddamn thing. Now, let me take you through some things in recent times. Recent times. I'm not going back way in ancient history, but let's talk about the great generation. You know, the boomers. World War II. And after World War II, the GIs came home to a plethora of opportunities. There were small business loans for GIs. There were college education monies that were made available for GIs. And most of all, home loans for GIs. Now, understand this, that the greatest wealth-building engine in the United States of America is home ownership. It is through home ownership that many people have built and built wealth, built businesses, built communities. It is through the wealth that is generated through home ownership. But I'm going to get to that in a minute because I want to start with small business loans. It's an interesting thing that in the years from World War II or post-World War II until about the 90s, most of the captains of industry in America were people who had served in the military. The military produced great leaders. The unfortunate thing is that blacks were systematically excluded from that. Blacks didn't go on to become captains of industries or leaders in the community and things like that. Why? Because Jim Crow and tacit racism, that means unspoken racism for those of you who are into wordplay, that kept a lot of black folks out of that mix. So you come home and there are these small business loans that are made available to GIs. The unfortunate thing is that in many black communities, because of this thing called redlining, they were not able to get the loans to build businesses in their communities. And I know some people personally that I grew up with. One of them, and you can look this guy up, but his name was Reverend Ray Shoulders. And Reverend Ray owned a supermarket in our neighborhood. And Reverend Ray told me that the reason that he was able to buy his supermarket was he was able to buy it cash money. He wasn't able to get a loan to do that. But then he wanted to expand, and he couldn't because the banks wouldn't lend him money. And even if they were to lend him money, they wouldn't insure him. They wouldn't insure Reverend Ray because of the neighborhood that he was in, even though that our neighborhood was not all that bad at the time. It was a hood, but it wasn't like completely ghetto, if you know what I mean. But Reverend Ray had big steel roller doors to protect his business, and he had to have that because he couldn't insure his business. So you got these small business loans that are designed to help the GIs become successful and become captains of industry, become captains of business, but that was excluded, or black veterans were excluded from that program. Strike one. Then there was education, and we know that education is fundamental. I mean, if you listen, I'm not saying that formal education is the only thing, because street education, vocational education, on-the-job education is all very good. But the thing is that this country was largely built on people with college degrees, college education. So the GIs come back and there's money for college, but because of segregation, blacks couldn't go to the major universities at that time. They were limited to the historically black colleges and universities, for which they could not get GI funding because these colleges and institutions were not considered to be accredited at that time. Strike two. So we have no business, no education. And now we get to the pillar of American wealth. Home ownership, owning property has been the single greatest way that Americans have built wealth in this country. But what happened was that this money that was set aside for GIs to get home loans was only available in communities that were predominantly white. Black people didn't have access to this money. Matter of fact, there are many cases, documented cases, where GIs went and got white straw buyers to buy homes for them so that they could take advantage of some of this government sponsored. And see, let me tell you something, because people will talk about welfare and they'll say, oh, and their paradigm of the welfare queen is this black woman. Guess what? Welfare comes in many flavors, boys and girls. Entitlements such as these, this is welfare. Corporate welfare, farm subsidies, that's welfare. These are all welfare programs that are designed to help who they're designed to help. And those people were not black people. So anyway, let me get to this home ownership thing. A lot of the suburban communities were built specifically to create a division between white America and black America. Levittown, Pennsylvania is a real good example. Levittown was a planned community that was built entirely on the principle of a community that was devoid of the Negro problem. I mean, and there are others. Oakland County, outside of Detroit, which Oakland County has a substantial black population these days. But back in the day, it was basically if you crossed 8 Mile to the north of Detroit, that was a place that you didn't want to be if you were black after dark. Or if you go southwest of Detroit, Dearborn, the home of the Ford Motor Company, which was a community planned and instituted by Henry Ford for the same purpose, to exclude what they call the Negro problem. So you have all of this money that's made available to develop these homes in suburban communities, but none to buy existing housing stock in, say, the north end of Detroit or southwest Detroit or East Detroit, or Northwest Detroit. And so all of this money was made available, and through this, people have built homes that have passed on through generations. And not only that, they have been able to take advantage of the rising price of real estate in order to refinance, basically turning the house into an ATM machine. So that anytime you needed some money, you were able to draw on the equity in your home. And mind you, that the few blacks that were able to buy homes, these equity programs weren't available because of the neighborhoods that they were in. So we had no plan for small business growth of blacks in America, no plan for education growth in black America, and no plan for home ownership. Now, what does all of this mean? Because somebody would say, well, Derek, you're talking about the past. Let's let bygones be bygones. Forgive and forget. And listen, y'all, I'm all for that. I'm all for forgiving and forgetting. The problem is that the way things are is because of the way things have been. Now, we don't have a Wayback Machine like Mr. Peabody and Sherman where we can go back into time and fix these issues. Don't have that. And we obviously cannot dwell on the past if we're going to move forward. However, we can put plans in place that make capital available in places where it hasn't been, to make insurance available in places where it hasn't been, and to make education available to people that it hasn't been available to. And another thing, too, is that we can decouple public education from property taxes so that all schools have equal access to funding. Because if all schools have equal access to funding, then that means that we get the best and brightest teachers in all schools. And then these best and brightest teachers will then produce the best and brightest students, irrespective of zip code. And this is a way forward. But let me tell you this, that nature abhors a vacuum. And when all of the goodness of community, when all of the goodness of home ownership, when all of the goodness of business ownership, when all of that goes away, something has to come in and take its place. And this goes back to what I was saying about hope. Because if there is no hope, people will fall to their basis instincts. It simply becomes a need to survive. How do I eat? How do I keep a roof over my head? How do I protect my family? And then it gets to be a dog eat dog thing. And that is the issue. See, here's the thing. The black community didn't just fall into disrepair because Negroes are inferior. I hate to bust anyone's racist bubble on that one. But people are just trying to figure out how to eke it out, how to survive. And the people that can get out do get out. And that presents another problem, because if the conditions become so bad that they become unsustainable for a middle-class existence, then that means the middle class now moves out. And anybody that is a potential inspiration to young people, they go too. See, in my community, I could tell you stories about Mr. Mims and Mr. Pruitt, Mr. and Mrs. Coleman, Mr. and Mrs. Sharp, Mrs. Brown, Mr. and Mrs. Kimball. I could tell you stories about people that I grew up around. And I looked up to them, and they were all working class people. But now every one of those people that I mentioned, they are either gone on to glory or gone out of the hood. And the neighborhood that I grew up in no longer has the role models it once had. So who become the role models? Well, like I said, nature abhors a vacuum. This is where the drug dealers come in, and the pimps come in, and the gangsters come in, and the ballers, and the hustlers, and the hoes, and the pimps. And they come in. And now they become the role models. Why? Because they're the ones that seem to be making it. Now, I'm going to say something here. My man, Dr. Keenan Davis, who is the founder of the One Institution Network, he often talks about how do we go back into the hood? How do we reclaim what we had? Well, that's another discussion for another time. But I'm going to say this, that those of us who have been fortunate enough to get out need to reach back. Notice I said reach back and not as in reaching backward and not as in reaching downward, but I'm saying going back to where you came from. Listen, there are a lot of problems here. There's a lot to unpack in all of this, and I'm trying to cover this the best that I can in 30 minutes, but understand this, that black on black crime, the demise of the black community, did not happen in a vacuum. This happened because of systematic racism. Notice I said systematic, but it's also systemic. These are the things that were done intentionally to ruin entire communities. And I could go on and on. I mean, there's a bunch of other things, too, about how they built highways that ran through our communities and destroyed them and all of that. And that's another subject for another time. But I just want to deal with this. I want everyone who is in the sound of my voice to understand that this is not a self-inflicted wound, contrary to popular belief. Because, see, like I'm going to tell you, there are a bunch of racist folks out here that they would like you to believe that black people just brought this on themselves. And they didn't. Drugs exist in communities where there is no hope. Despair, when despair kicks in, people will try to medicate that. And that's where drugs come in. And somebody's got to bring these drugs in. And I'm going to tell you something. People have said this many times. Black people don't own ships, planes, or big trucks. How does all that get, all that goodness get from Colombia to Detroit or Afghanistan to Detroit or Mexico to Detroit? I'm picking on Detroit, y'all. Now, I don't have anything against Detroit, but that's where I'm from. So I'm speaking where I'm from. But it's this. If we don't deal with all of these things, first, the root cause is to deal with the systemic racism that has produced this problem. The second thing is to deal with the despair. What is causing the despair? The despair goes back to what racism did to these communities. And then, once we deal with that, then and only then can we deal with the scourge of black on black crime. Now, if you like this podcast, I highly encourage you to subscribe and give it a 5-star rating on iTunes. Also, be sure to subscribe to the One Institution channel on YouTube, where you could see the best of all of the One Institution podcasts. And if you're so inclined, be sure to get out to Amazon.com and get yourself a copy of Deconstructing Religion, written by yours truly. So until the next time, may you be happy, may you be well, and may you be filled with peace.